Radio Ghana.
And live from our national studios here in Accra, networking with all our regional FM stations and across the globe on gbcghana.com, we say welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program, where we'll be looking at the issues directly from the perspective of the newsmakers and the experts. My name is Kinsley Obinchere. For tonight, promoting ecotourism, some forest reserves to be converted as ecotourist sites. What will this bring to the national kitty? Also, will the ecotourist idea help to address the hydra-headed problem of illegal mining and logging? President Mahama directs quick action on the passage of the Right to Information Bill and the Broadcasting Bill. We ask, are the advocates of right to information happy with this directive? How long will it take to become an act, or will they take to become acts? Nuclear energy, where does Ghana fix itself in this international vexed issue? Some experts will be telling us how we can avoid a minefield in promoting the nuclear energy agenda as Ghana prepares herself to become part of the nations using nuclear energy. These, together with other issues and your text and comments on 026-301-7882, 026-301-7882 will be yours in the next hour or so. Behind the News, our text line once again is 026-301-7882. You are getting us live on Garden City Radio if you are somewhere around Kumasi. And you're also live on Radio BR in Sunyani together with Sunrise FM in Kofodia. Is it a measure to check the activities of illegal miners or illegal logging, or a measure to generate more revenue for the state? Government is considering converting parts of the country's forest reserves into ecotourism sites. The Minister of Lands, Forestry and Natural Resources, who dropped the hint, said the idea is part of measures to increase revenue. According to him, the Forestry Commission, which is the lead agency in this new policy initiative, will see some of its staff trained to manage the ecotourism sites. And the sector minister, Alhaji Inusa Fuseni, has got more for us as he joins us on the line and we pick up more of the issues here. You are welcome, sir.
Thank you, and how are you at Radio Ghana?
Yes, Sam, we are all doing well. And we also want to ask directly, what is the broad objective of the policy to do this conversion?
Oh, first of all, let me make the situation very clear.
Mm-hmm.
The generating revenue from our forest resources and protecting the forest through ecotourism is not mutually exclusive. It's one and the same thing. We are saying that when you log, because traditionally, the forest has been known for the purposes of logging timber, and selling timber products. And that is one use of the forest. And that depletes the forest. It takes a long time for you to plant, for the forest cover to come back to the state that it will be before you can log again.
Mm-hmm.
And we are saying that in this modern day and age, the forest plays a very important role in the environmental protection of the country. That the carbon dioxide that we all emit through breathing is cleared by the forest. That the water, most of the water sources of this country, or water bodies of this country, take their store or catchment areas within the forest. That the forest holds key to certain traditional medicines that still are useful to communities that depend on the forest for those medicines. Therefore, the forest is a food basket for a greater number of people than we can imagine. Now, because the forest plays a useful part in our lives, the modern thinking is that forests must be managed on sustainable basis, which is called sustainable forest management. That we can still have the resource revenue from the forest while protecting the forest against logging. That even if we are going to log, we log in a way that does not deplete the forest and have adverse consequences on the interlinkages. And so this is what we are doing, and that is what is informing government to move from just simple forest reserves into ecotourism parks. Two, when we talk of revenue, I mean, generally, Ghanaians and many people are quick to say that the forest sector contributed less than 3% to the GDP. That is an understatement of the fact. Because the 3% that forestry contributes to the revenue, to the GDP of this country, constitutes the cash aspect of the forest. That is the logging of timber and timber products. That the non-cash aspects of forest utilization, which is very critical, has never made its way into the accounting system mm-hmm. of the country. Mm-hmm. And I give you an example. Contumbre is a forest product. We know the value of contumbre. Tell me, has it ever made its way into our accounting systems of the country?
Is it not added to the agric sector?
No. It's not farmed. You don't farm it. You just go to the forest and harvest it. You don't farm contumbre. Snail. You don't farm it. Now some people are farming it.
Okay. Yeah, I was just drawing attention to it.
Now some people are farming it because they now know that they will continue because we have depleted the stock in the forest, in the natural forest, that people have to farm it. But I'm saying even have gathering snails, mm-hmm. bushmeat alone, by conventional calculation, last year, accounted for more than 180 million Ghana cedis. That was consumed. How does it make its way into our accounting system? In any case, we don't want to continue on the trajectory mm-hmm. of only killing our animals and eating. Mm-hmm. Because generations yet unborn must also know what an aardvark is. I don't know whether you know an aardvark.
Mm-hmm.
An animal
ant-eater, giant ant-eaters.
Or ant-eater.
Yeah.
You see, many people, aardvarks are common. They are a common feature or animal species in Ghana. But many people don't know it. And there are many such animals that we think that, taken from the Kenyan example, and taken from principles of sustainable forest management, that we can still keep all these animals, provide habitats for them, and then we, in our leisure time, will go and visit them. That while we'll visit, we're integrating the wild and game life into the rest of the economy, because mm-hmm. many people will be providing services
yeah.
for so people who want to go there.
Which areas are you looking at?
Well, first of all, we are looking at the Achimota Park. Plans are far advanced to ensure that we protect the forest, and the way to do it effectively is to turn it into an eco-park. Two, we are looking at Etiwa. That Etiwa's three water bodies, the Densu, Ayensu, and Brim, take their water sources from Etiwa. Meanwhile, it's under attack from illegal mining and logging. We need to protect Etiwa. The way to protect Etiwa is to turn it into an ecotourism park or reserve, so that we can protect the forest against the illegal activities of loggers and miners, protect the water catchment areas, which supply more than 70% of water to Accra, and also create a basis for people to continue to respect the protection, because we'll be integrating economic activities with the rest of the community.
Is it just a fine plan, or you already have things on the ground to get it going?
It's not a fine plan. If we don't go that way, we'll be left behind.
Mm-hmm.
I just returned yesterday from Turkey. I attended with a team from the Forestry Commission and the Minister of Lands and Natural Resources, a forum, the UN Forum on Forests. And the general thinking is simple.
Mm-hmm.
You have to move from the consumptive aspect of the forest to that non-consumptive. If we talk about green economy, many countries are increasing their forest cover. Desert countries are beginning to turn their deserts into forest areas.
Yeah, we'll see very soon how you operationalize using the existing structures like the Forestry Commission. But please hold on. We have another person who has been so much concerned about the environment. He's So Osu Krantin, an associate executive director of WACAM. Hannah Osu Krantin, I should say, an associate executive director of WACAM. You are welcome, madam.
Thank you very much, my brother.
I guess you've heard what the sector minister is talking about, and you may not have all the details yet. We are still trying to extract. But what do you think about it, considering environmental conservation and sustainability issues?
Okay, thank you very much again. I think anybody who is thinking about environmental preservation and then environmental conservation, they are two different things, should be approved. Why am I saying this? Every country should have an environmental bank where we could preserve our flora and fauna, where the animals could have their natural habitats, and where nobody could disturb that environment. Apart from that, we keep a protected forest, not because we want to conserve animals, but also the advantages that it can present for the eco, the micro and the macro eco climatic conditions in the world. So, for instance, the minister talked about Etiwa Forest. There are other forests in the country. The Genialipo Forest Reserve. We have the Bonsambipo Forest Reserve in the Bonaha Forest, New Subri, and all these forest reserves. But as we speak today, they cannot be said to be pristine forest. It has almost been devoured by government going back on its policies of conserving or preserving or protecting the natural environment, forest reserves. Apart from that, we have the production forest where we could do our logging, we could do our picking of non-timber resources, the snails that the sector minister was talking about, the timber, the bamboo products, the cane products and what have you. These are forests that are open for some activities, which we also need to conserve. That is the conservation aspect. The one should be preserved. The forest reserves should be preserved. This one should be conserved. Conservation means that you can use the forest resources, but then you use them in a manner that you will not deplete the forest. So we could be gathering and picking and then making sure that we keep the balance so that we maintain the equilibrium of the environment. Now, if we are going to have a policy, I hope that, Mr. Minister, this is not going to be one of the many dreams that we've had in the country, where we have nice documentation on paper, but when it comes to implementation, we are found wanting. But then these lofty ideas would be implemented, and then we would generate the needed resources, and then keep away from the wanton exploitation and depletion of these natural resources.
Madam Osukranting, I know from what you are saying, you already even want it happening. But let's look at one critical challenge. We have some forest reserves where already people are in there doing illegal mining, and they give the excuse of generating their livelihood from such activities. How can they be brought on board in such a way that they will see this as also something that they can live on without necessarily destroying the environment?
You see, there's this saying that if a fish is getting rotten, it begins from the head. Government decided for some strange reasons to give away protected forests for mining exploration. In fact, if you look at the National Land Policy, which was promulgated in 1999. I know the sector minister is well vested in some of these things because he's a lawyer. And then they look at the provisions in the act, in the policy. Under no circumstance should mining be allowed in protected forests. And even when mining is taking place in forests that communities depend on, this should be done in such a manner that community people will not be worse off. You do not deprive community people of their livelihood, of the use of their land. So there are checks and balances put in place in the policy to ensure that nobody will lose out. There are forests that are not occupied, so you can still manage the resource and then have some revenue. Then government decided to give away the protected forest for mining. So once you have this move from government, you open out the floodgates and everybody enters. So now, if you go to many of the reserves that we have in the country. Either government has granted exploration license for mining companies to exploit, or some illegal operators are there doing their own thing.
So in the light of this new policy,
the political world of government, for me, is crucial. Government should be seen as serious protector of natural environment. Then people could be educated to also go through the same process and then ensure that some of these things happen.
Okay.
So let me give you a simple calculation. If you think of ecotourism, which would attract a lot of us, some of us are nature lovers, so we'll go and see nature, which will give revenue, which will be done in such a way that those who are leasing their land will have some share of their revenue. And then you develop a program of alternative livelihood where community people who are losing their land will have other livelihood options to fall back on. Then you are incorporating the people. And then at every step of the journey, they become major stakeholders in decision making and how to manage the risk.
Okay. Madam Osukranson, I'll come back to you because you are on that same point. Let me pick the mind of Alhaji Yunusuf Hussaini on this particular one that you've raised. Alhaji, thanks so much for still holding on. But she's brought up a few of the challenges that you'll be confronted with. Is it a top-down or a bottom-up so that the people get to appreciate that you are not depriving them of their livelihood, but this is something they can share in and it will still remain for generations yet unborn?
Thank you so very much. And let me thank your other panel, your other, I don't know what to call her, panelist.
Hannah Osukranson, yes.
Hannah Osukranson for the brilliant ideas she's come up with. Clearly, anyone who knows and appreciates the interlinkages of our forest, the natural environment, and our own well-being, we'll have to work to protect the forest. I mean, it's not for nothing that it is said that when the last tree goes, the last man goes. It's not for nothing. Because there are linkages to human survival. And that is why, for me, at the Ministry of Lands and Natural Resources, let me assure Madam Cranton that I am seriously looking at the mining, and there are not many. I have myself refused to accede to others that have come. I'm seriously looking at the issue of mining in forest areas. Because we cannot allow it. It's just simply not allowable. I know of countries who have decided that they won't mine. They are going to protect their natural environment. And there are many. And they are not poor. They are not bankrupt. They get the resources to contribute to the GDP and provide infrastructure for their country. Two, when we talk about the communities, the forest-dependent communities and rural communities, and the protection and conservation of the forest, we simply mean that we must create the value and let people buy into the value. The communities must understand, the rural communities who depend on the forest, and there are many who are quite alarmed at the rate at which the forest is depleted because they know they are losing a lot from the natural, traditional products that they used to harvest from the forest. They know, and they are alarmed. But there are others who, with careless abandon, are collaborating with people to deplete the forest and degrade the forest. And so we have to create the value. And after the buy-in, we create an integrated system whereby the communities will have a reason to continue to protect the forest. Government will also have a reason to continue to protect the forest. Until we create the value and the value connector, we are not going to go anywhere.
And how are you going to do it with the people?
Yes. With the people, for instance. Now, if we get to Itua, it is not the local communities. In many areas, it's not the local communities who are in the forest doing the illegal logging or the mining. People here, people in the cities, go to the local areas, recruit the guys to go and mine and harvest the fair trees for them. They go and do the mining for them. Let's get down to the local communities. And that's why when the idea was first mooted by the Uchihini mm-hmm. for the preservation of the Etiwa forest. Simpliciter,
mm-hmm.
I told him, Chief, I agree entirely with you, but we must do it, we must turn it into an ecotourism and mm-hmm. build a belt around the forest whereby anybody, like, and I use the example of Grotius, a famous jurist whose house was built on a plateau. So that anybody going up to the plateau to see the jurist, people will know that so-and-so went to see the jurist. So that if you have a case, you can reasonably infer that he had been biased because somebody had gone to see him. Just like that, in that concept, we apply it. And then our local communities, the integration of the forest into all communities is that simple. For instance, Madame has just said that she's a lover of nature. When she goes to visit, to see nature, she's going to buy water. She's going to buy canned drink. She's going to buy food. The food she's not going to carry from Accra to wherever she's going to see the nature. The food will be at the local environment, in the local communities. She's going to buy a hat.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to buy a canvas.
Yeah.
That is the local community providing services for people who want to enjoy the forest.
So
that is how you integrate the local communities into the protection. And when they see a direct linkage in the improvement of their well-being by the policy of protecting and conserving the forest, then
they will protect it. Okay. I will come back to you. But, Madam Osu Krantin, before you go, you've heard exactly how the linkages are being drawn. Do you still think that there should be massive education even before it has started so that the people get to know that nobody is coming to take away what they have and what they are benefiting from?
Well, I think I should go to a typical rural community. They understand that they need to protect the forest. The sector minister said it, that many of the people moving into the forest for illegal operations or legal operations are not indigenous. Because as for us indigenous, we know that even when we want to perform our rituals, we need the forest. We need water bodies. We settle around some of these facilities. So the education is just to let them be aware that now government has a political role to act and act in a very responsible manner to ensure that nobody comes trespassing and then destroy what they preserve and know to be part of their system and value orientation. They know it, that they cannot do without the forest. So that education should be there. The other thing that the state should pick up is to educate themselves, those in government today, to understand that economism is different from development. You can't rely on just extraction and then destroying everything in the name of development, and then get a fifth of what you get when you extract just one parameter from the forest. And I'm happy the minister talked about the sale of bushmeat. In fact, if you look back into history, 2003, 2009, you realize that what we realized from mining, from mechanized mining, was about a third or a fifth of what we realized when we sold bushmeat. So that is also helping our economy. And then if we add this concept of eco-tourism and then do a proper integration of it, say that the community people who own the process, they know that they are part of the process, then we are talking business. Otherwise, we'll just put things on paper and then it will be on drawing board.
That is why we are pushing and letting people know so that they hold those proposing responsible for the action.
So that, we need to act as a state. Because, believe you me, we are losing everything that is dear to us as a state. We are losing our national, our natural capital.
We are sending the messages for policing to be done. We want to thank you very much, Madam Osu Krantin, for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And Osu Krantin is the Associate Executive Director of WACAM. You are still live on Behind the News, and you are getting us on Twin City Radio. Mohammed Asa is the development consultant. Very soon we'll be talking to him as to what he thinks can be added to even make this much more beneficial than it's even been proposed. But coming back to you, Alhaji Nusa Fuseini, you've heard the suggestions as it goes. And naturally, you need people who will also police even the efforts being made. Are you going to...
Let me say one thing. Madam Quentin, welcome. I said we should differentiate between economism and development.
Yeah.
Even now, as I speak to you, the economism has given way to a right to a healthy environment. And that development must be consistent with a right to healthy environment.
Mm-hmm.
That if we deplete our forest resources, if we deprive people whose lives are dependent on the forest, if we conduct our activities in such a way that the forest can no longer, we can no longer be assured of a healthy environment in which will assure our dignity and allow us the right to endure our civil and political rights, then we are not making, that's not development. So whatever we are doing as a people, and that is why this thinking is gaining ground. I mean, to be honest with you, and she said it, I'm a legal practitioner, but exposed to the benefits, the tremendous benefits that we could derive mm-hmm. from protecting our forest cover. My brother, I will give everything
mm-hmm.
to work with people like her to protect it. Because our lives depend on it.
Yes. We'll mark it that you said it here so that we'll always be reminding you of it. We'll come back to you. Mohammed Asai is a development consultant. He's now joining us in the discussion. Mohammed, you are welcome.
Thank you very much, Isley. It's a long time. How are you?
Fine, thank you. And you have been following consistently some of these developments. What do you say about the plans and what can be done?
Yeah, Isley, I think the discussion around this topic, I must say that it's a very important discussion. I've been calling for these platforms to be established so that constantly we discuss about our environment and development. Because there is a very close and positive link between our environment and development. And if you get opportunity at this, I think it's a very good opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to thank the Honorable Minister. It's a long time. I think he has actually been an active individual who has much interest in the forest and agriculture sector. And when I was working in that sector closely in Kent, and I've been working closely with him. Honorable Minister, good evening.
Hi,
Madam. Anna, I think we have been close, and then we have been working all along on this sector. So I think these people have said it all, and then I would like to just add it much to this. I think what we need to also just understand about the economism and then the exploitation of natural resources. We always refer to natural resources and development, and then we refer to Zimama, who says that resources are not until they become. And natural resources are there to develop the people. The most important thing in natural resources management, and for that matter governance, is how do we maximize the benefit of a resource to the benefit of the people who live with it. So if you're talking about the forest sector in particular, you're talking about the people who live around the forest, how do we make sure that they benefit from it, as well as the larger country in that, for that matter, Ghana. So this debate has gone over and over, and it has really reflected in policy intentions and decisions. If you look at the 1994 Forest and Wildlife Policy,
mm-hmm.
it's very clear that the forest of this country belongs to the people, but it is vested in the world today. It is vested for keep by the president. So from this thinking, you can see that community ownership of forestry is very important. Unfortunately, over the years, we have realized that our forest in Ghana here has been timberized. Let me use that, terminology. Timberization of the forest sector has narrowed the forest sector to only cutting of timber. And if you look at the policy from the 1980s all the way to the 2004 Forest and Wildlife Policy, much of our attention has based on how much forest or how much timber we can cut. And no wonder that our forest has moved from 6 million hectares all the way from 1900. And on around in 2005, we can only boost of 1.6 million hectares of forest.
Uh-huh.
This is an alarming figure. That means a lot of bridges and policy direction. I'm very happy that currently we are reviewing the Forest and Wildlife Policy of 1994, and I'm sure very soon the new policies will be coming. What we need to understand is that we need to take a different approach to this. And I'm very happy the new dimensions are coming, like the ecotourism, tourism in the forest sector. This is not a new thing. If you go to countries like Indonesia, if you go to Indonesia and you don't go to Bogo, there's a place called Bogo in Indonesia, just about 200 kilometers from Jakarta. And this is an area that they have really used the forest for the benefit of the people.
Mm-hmm.
You go there and then they have preserved this forest, and it's an eco-tourism site. It has not lost its natural forest value. They have preserved all the trees. And you can go there and see even trees that they have imported from other countries. And mm-hmm. it is really making a lot of money. You pay not less than $1 to enter into that forest. So this is where you think about making the forest benefit the people.
Mm-hmm.
But the most important thing that we need to understand and then we need to put into context when we are thinking about ecotourism in the forest sector is how do we benefit the community people.
Mm-hmm.
And this discussion, I think the minister and then Madam Hannah have elaborated on it, that we need to let the people get involved.
Okay.
If you don't get the people involved in the management of the forest sector, you are just doomed for nothing.
Yeah, okay.
We have in this country a formula for distributing the forest revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at that formula for distributing the forest revenue, you see that the community people get nothing.
Uh-huh.
We have given more to the Forestry Commission. We have given some to the District Assembly. We are giving some to the two lands and then the chief.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you go to the communities and they tell you that, look, when it comes to this forest, we gain nothing from it. So it is for good that we allow an illegal logger to come and cut and give us something small than a government to take it.
Okay.
And give it.
So they are giving the reasons that we've spoken about. Mohammed, we want to thank you very much for sharing your input with us, too.
Yes. Thanks so much.
And thanks so much for joining us. Mohammed Asai is a development consultant, and he's telling us much more. At least we'll be creating more search for us so that we get to discuss. But coming to you, I like the news of seeing it. The Forestry Commission is going to be charged to do all this. Do we have the staff all ready and prepared to get on board?
We have the staff, we have the skills, we have the personnel. And I'm happy to say that I think that clearly, the forum that you have provided also manifests one fact that we have people who understand about sustainable forest management principles or policies. And so all these people are part and parcel of the greater alliance that could be formed to ensure that we obtain maximum benefit from the utilization of our forest resources.
You spoke about linkages right from the beginning. How are you linking up with other concerned ministries in this case, like the Ministry of Tourism?
Oh, yes, that's a good question. That's a good question. Indeed, you cannot protect the forest if you don't have an intersectorial approach, because there are clear linkages to agri, there are clear linkages to transport, there are clear linkages to water resources, and many more. So, you need to, and that's what we're doing. We're working together. The last time I spoke to the tourism minister, that my brother, any time that we are going to do this thing, please don't get only my technical officers. I want to be involved. I can tell you that just yesterday, the Minister of Environment organized a meeting, and it was an intersectorial ministry. All the ministers who have something to do with the environment were part of this. Meeting. The Minister of Local Government and Rural Development is part. Because you see, we have 230 or so municipal assemblies in this country that their jurisdiction covers every space of land in this country.
Okay.
That the forests are found within jurisdictional areas of the MMDAs.
Mm-hmm.
That they have the primary responsibility of protecting and conserving the forest and ensuring that or the utilization of our forest resources are done in a sustainable manner.
Yeah, okay.
They have to understand the policy so that they can implement it effectively and efficiently. And so they have to be part of it.
Well, we want to thank you very much for sharing this with us, but we'll be monitoring progress on the front.
I also want to thank you so very much for creating this important platform. The platform that you should continue to create for us to have the opportunity to engage with the larger public, so that all of us would build consensus on how to manage our forest resources.
Thanks so much. Alhaji Yunus of Husseini is Sector Minister for the Ministry of Lands, Forestry and Natural Resources. But we spoke about tourism. Ben Ohinia is the Head of Public Relations of the Ghana Tourism Authority, and he's joined us on the line. You are welcome, sir.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. We're talking about ecotourism. Has it featured so much on your agenda?
Oh, yeah. Ecotourism is one of the products that we sell or market as a destination. So ecotourism features prominently on our tourism delivery. And I'm glad the Honorable Minister has talked about it.
How have you done it? Because for some Ghanaians, you know, when you speak about tourism, most of the time they think it's foreigners coming to look at something in Ghana.
Yeah, as a destination, we need to have our products. We need to have our attractions. We need to have what will pull the foreigners to come in and have a look at what we offer as a destination. But having said that, let me say that we need to enhance the products that we have. Because as you are aware, the products are mainly in their raw forms. So if today the Honorable Minister for Land, Forest and Natural Resources is saying that they're going to dwell emphasis on the promotion of and development of ecotourism, to us in the sector, it's welcome. It's most welcome. Because when people go to, let's take our attraction sites or the forest reserves, They are still raw. They haven't been enhanced. So there's a need to put, let's say, eco-tourist sites or eco-tourist products in these areas. Because when people go to the forests are in their virgin forms. But when these sites, when these lodges are put there, people would like to spend the night. They want to be in tune with nature. And by so doing, they'll be enhancing the infrastructure at the place. Roads will be constructed. Electricity will be sent to the place. Telephone, water, name them. So then it gives value to the site. And that is where we will make a lot of money because wildlife is one area that we lack as a destination. You know, our East African counterparts are cashing in big time on wildlife. So if the ministry is taking this initiative, we in the tourism sector will jump at it, and we will form a collaboration. We'll form a collaboration with them and see how best we could promote it.
Well, we want to thank you very much for your input too.
But let me also say that before we go, let me also say that by enhancing the ecotourism sites, we're going to create jobs. Because you know, tourism creates jobs, and when people get there, domestic tourism as well as international tourism is going to be enhanced. So it will curb the rural-urban migration because people will not always come to the urban areas to find jobs.
Yeah, exactly.
When the immediate communities or the communities around these sites could be trained as tour guides, they could be trained as security men, they could be trained as service providers. So we will be helping the rural-urban migration.
Okay.
And then again, we will distribute national wealth because when people move from the rural areas to those sites, they'll be leaving money at the local communities and the local economies will be enhanced. So to us in tourism, it's a big opportunity and we are all out for it.
Well, as we said, we'll be monitoring and seeing how best it helps in the total development of the forest areas and the country too. Thank you so much, the Benoni.
Thank you, sir.
That's the head of public relations at the Ghana Tourism Authority. Behind the news, you are still live and getting us on Unique 95.7 MHz and also on Ura Radio. We want to move to issues in relation to energy. The mention of nuclear sends cold shivers down the spine of many people. On many occasions, it is because it is looked at from the possibility of disaster. However, many scientists believe that if properly harnessed, nuclear energy can prove to be very beneficial. In recent times, Ghana has been exploring the possibility of having this energy that is described as cheap and clean. The Minister of Energy confirmed Ghana's determination to venture into the area after a meeting with the head of the Africa section of the International Atomic Energy Agency. How far has the country gone into the preparations, and what will it take for a nuclear energy dream to materialize? We'll be speaking to a scientist in a moment and a physicist, Dr. Michael Bozoy, who he's a Ghanaian scientist based in Germany. But for now, we want to see where Ghana is with the situation. And Dr. Kwame Obu is the Deputy Director General of the Ghana Atomic Energy Commission. He's also on the line with us. You are welcome, Doc.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I just want to ask, where are we? Because there's been so much talk in recent times, and it appears there's some concrete measures on the ground.
Yeah, in your introduction, you made some statements that need a bit of clarification.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the nuclear industry or nuclear energy has always provided energy mm-hmm. for people. The issues that make people shiver is that, number one, the whole program started with a bomb. So anytime you mention nuclear energy, the first thing that comes to people's mind is bomb. Somebody somewhere will do a bomb and drop, like the Second World War I, on Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Two, that the nuclear industry supplying nuclear energy is more than 50 years old. In fact, and the number of nuclear power plants in the world is over 150 plus and counting, generating almost 17% of the total world electricity. Hello?
Yes, you are still online.
Okay, yeah. So the technology is matured.
Mm-hmm.
And then all you have to do is do it in a proper way.
Mm-hmm.
It's accidents can happen and will happen to any form of energy and in any facet of life.
Yeah.
You know, when you compare like the vehicle, the cars that we drive, cars kill more people than aeroplanes. But anytime there's an aeroplane disaster, we all get worried because we talk about the numbers. So that industry is very well regulated. That's the same with nuclear. Because of the dangers involved is very well regulated, and the international community will not allow you to do anything just on your own. So there are steps that we need to take in our energy program, and we have to do that. First, we have to get in place what we call an independent regulatory body.
Mm-hmm.
Independent in terms that they have the capacity to regulate. Number two, they are independent. They will not be not be any political interference.
Mm-hmm.
Three, that they have the financial resources to carry out an independent work. Well, we don't have any institution that will be totally independent because mm-hmm. the people will be appointed, by the way.
Yeah.
The board will be appointed to the director general and those who go through competitive lessons. So that's the first thing we need to do. Promulgate the Ghana Nuclear Regulatory Authority Bill and then have an independent regulatory authority. Number two, for any system to run, you need human beings to do that. Unless you have money like the United Arab Emirates, who can afford to import. Everybody. Everybody from anywhere. Unfortunately, we don't have that type of resource. So the second one is that you need to train the human resource.
Mm-hmm.
It's for that reason that the International Atomic Energy Commission, the Ghana government through the Ghana Atomic Energy and the University of Ghana, mm-hmm. set up what we call the Graduate School of Nuclear and Allied Science to train the necessary personnel. So that's also a leg of the decisions that we take in.
Mm-hmm.
The third is that you need your grid system or your grid infrastructure from which you take the power through must be strengthened.
Mm-hmm.
So they are doing that, and they are doing part of it. It's also through what we call the West African Power Pool, that we are interconnecting all the West Africa electrical lines.
Mm-hmm.
The reason you want to do that is that if your nuclear power generates about 1,000 megawatts, if you have to change your fuel, at least you will go about 2 weeks without that nuclear power.
Mm-hmm.
But that happens once in 36 months, of course.
Yeah.
So it's a scheduled thing you have to do. If you are a small grid, that's like Ghana, which mm-hmm. is currently at, say, 2,000 megawatts, and you add one and it's 6,000, when you do that, you are taking about 33 or 40% of the grid off at the same time.
Yeah.
Your grid will collapse. Mm-hmm. So you need to strengthen it, which mm-hmm. currently the government is doing. Okay.
Yeah.
As you do that, you need to do studies on the locality. given what has happened at Fukushima.
Fukushima, yeah.
Which was a natural disaster. If that natural disaster has happened, I say, God forbid, at Akusumbu, there was no way that dam would be there. And all the water will go down, and every town below at Akusumbu will be swept off. So natural disasters will occur. But what you want to do is that you want to go to a place where you have studied enough so that you don't have those type of history.
Yeah. So, Dr. Kwame Ebu, where do you have in mind? Feasibility studies
that
are still ongoing.
That one, I'll tell you something.
Uh-huh.
If I tell you the place today,
yes.
Tomorrow that place will cease to exist. Because we will sell it and divide it, and then when we come to acquire it, it will become a new problem on its own. So, for that reason,
it's a top secret.
Yeah, I won't tell you.
And a security issue.
It is because of our behavior. If you say it now, tomorrow morning, everybody will move there and go and buy it. Then when we want to acquire it, we have to pay huge compensation to get it. You get it?
But naturally, it's not the Kwabena area where the office is located.
No. It's not the Kwabena area because we need, to cool the reactor, you need water. And you don't have any water in Kwabena. We don't have any big river in Kwabena, so definitely not Kwabena, so we can listen. Our reactor here, we have our own water we supply to it, too. But not for power reactor. The amount of water we need is too huge.
Uh-huh.
And we cannot do that by Ghana Water Company.
Okay.
That would be a disaster.
Dr. Kwame Ebu, I'll come back to you in a moment. We have somebody who has also worked with you, a physicist. He's now being...
I know him.
You know him very well.
Yes.
Dr. Michael Ebuzo, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Many thanks.
Yes. We are looking at the possibility of Ghana generating energy.
Yeah.
And as you know, that is what we've been told. Stringent measures should be put in place. From your experience, what else is so important if the dream should come true?
I believe that today, any discussion about acquisition of a nuclear power plant should be transparent and accessible to the whole population. The population must be carried along. I have experienced, at least in Europe, from the 60s, the great enthusiasm for nuclear power up to the present, where the majority of the population, at least in Germany, sort of does not want nuclear power. So to tackle the last point which the speaker mentioned, the location,
yes.
It is not just a matter of taking any place. You have to study the geology. You have to see whether there is the water for cooling. Even normal, let's say, coal-driven power plants are usually located near rivers. So in Ghana, we have to ask the question, what kind of reactor do we need? You know, because of the problems inherent in the present generation of reactors, an international forum has been created called a fourth generation nuclear power to study research and development relating to the new type of reactors. This is being done also in collaboration with the United States Department of Energy Special Committee for advising the U.S. government on nuclear research. They participate. And it is important to note that you need at least 16 disciplines for the designing and operation of a nuclear power plant. Mathematics, physics, chemistry, biology, ecology, geology, hydrology, meteorology, computer science, and various engineering sciences like chemical, civil, electrical, materials, metallurgical, mechanical, and nuclear.
Mm-hmm.
Just from my old notes, we have to take into account the national and international environment of today. Since the development of terrorism and all the aspects connected with it, nuclear safety, and also Chernobyl and Fukushima. So it is not acceptable for us to simply say, we have a location or we are thinking of a location, but we can't talk of it. That disagree with, we should start serious discussion with transparency. Do we have the manpower? Okay, we can create a manpower. And we should be cautious with bringing in the IEA, because the IEA is not going to build a nuclear power reactor for any country. They are more concerned with non-proliferation, which they want strictly to enforce, and they advise the United Nations. And we must be able to see whether we have the necessary local industrial base, the economic, because to build a nuclear power plant, I think it's more difficult than building a bomb.
Yeah.
As one British scientist pointed out long ago, 1982 or so.
So, Dr. Gwazoi,
yes.
Looking at all that you said, by your own estimation, I know you are not directly in the system.
Yes.
How long can it take Ghana to get there?
I believe strictly we have first to discuss. You see, periodically we come up with these statements, Ghana must go nuclear. This is not the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it also happened during the Kufuor regime.
But now we see steps
but
in place.
I remember that the only heads of state which visited even Kwabena were the President, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, Colonel Achampong, and President Liman. Most other regimes did not show the enthusiasm needed for creating a scientific basis. So we need a clear-cut science policy.
Okay.
How much do we want to invest?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is going to send us a second-hand power plant reactor, just as we buy second-hand cars and second-hand tires and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So we should, you see, the whole, I have even a film from the German-French television set called ARD. They visited the mini reactor we have at Kwabena, and they were surprised that they could easily get to the reactor core, you know, without any problem. You get
no, that's a, that, no, that cannot be true.
Yeah.
That cannot be true.
Just a moment.
That is a palpable for Dr. Kodwe, palpable for false. Nobody can get to our reactor core.
Okay.
How you get to a reactor core?
I mean the room.
No.
I'm talking about the room.
If we take you,
I'll come to Kwabena to give you a copy of the list. I'm just
trying. You can come and bring it. But
yes.
You see, I don't like people who have that structure, who have worked in Kwabena. That's bad mind people. All these things you have said. When was the last time you visited Ghana? How do you know the things that have been done?
That's a problem.
Okay, please. Don't want any polemics. I'm just trying to say we have to discuss these things transparently,
okay,
because the international community is going to decide whether we have a reactor here or not.
Uh-huh.
This is what I'm trying to point out.
Okay.
So, please don't.
So, you believe, Dr. Abu, I'll give you the chance to clarify the other points coming up. But
no polemic.
Dr. Gwazoi, you believe it is possible for Ghana to have a nuclear energy reactor or plant?
It is not a simple answer of yes or no.
Well,
we have to put down all the facts.
Okay.
Yes, we have to discuss for above all. Sorry, I was going to say a German sentence. We have to discuss these things as professionals, please.
Okay.
As professionals.
Dr. Gwazoi,
in a polemic way.
You've raised the issues, and we want to thank you very much. But since it's not finished and there are still issues to trash out, we want to thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Okay, it was great.
Dr.
Pleasure.
Michael Gwazoi is
a
scientist based in Germany, and he's a physicist too. But Dr. Kwame Obu, I asked that question about the possibility and the years so that he will use his experience to tell us the possibilities. By your own estimation, how long or short will it take?
We have put a roadmap of 10 years on it.
10 years?
And that's what we are working on.
That is counting from this year?
Yeah, counting from 2012.
Uh-huh.
That's the time we started.
Uh-huh.
And he rightly said, I pointed out those things,
mm-hmm,
that we don't have the facility.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that the international, I've made mention of the international community.
Yeah.
Because you see, the nuclear industry is an industry. When something happens at one point, it affects the whole industry.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody will allow you
yes, if the international community is going to do it, the international watchdog is the IAEA.
Mm-hmm.
We all the things he has mentioned, those are the personnel that you need. There are about 19 issues that you need them to consider. I talk about a legal framework, mm-hmm. your grid infrastructure, your siting, the economics. You don't generate power and keep it. This power is not like water, where you can decide I'll store water.
Mm-hmm.
Power, once you generate it, you mm-hmm. must have an industry mm-hmm. that uses it. That's yeah. why when the first president of this country decided to build Akosombo Dam, and he saw that the usage will be very small, he had to bring in what? Vaco.
Vaco, yeah.
To take the power.
Mm-hmm.
You get it?
Yeah.
So all these committees are in place. And okay. the National Nuclear Power Power Implementation Committee is in place.
Mm-hmm.
You get it?
Yeah.
And all these committees are working.
Mm-hmm.
He said we should be transparent. Eh?
Yes.
We have to first get to what? Get all the geological data. Eh?
Yes.
And discuss with the local people that we are going to site the plant there.
Uh-huh.
Eh? Before you come to air, it's like if something you want to talk about somebody something, you haven't even acquired, you haven't talked to the people, and you come to air and say, hey, I'll be coming to do this in your area. Is that the way they go about it?
Mm-hmm. But it's still so relevant that the people get to know that this
yeah,
is happening.
It's relevant that the people get to know.
Yeah.
But when you have not finished
mm-hmm.
and you come out, Ghana, when we are not ready for an Olympic stadium, we announced that we will build an Olympic stadium where?
Mm-hmm.
At Tantra Hills area.
Yes.
Today, what do we have there?
They call the place race course.
Okay, whatever. Well, you see, that's the type of people we are. So you have to learn the culture of the people
mm-hmm.
and live along yes. that line.
Dr. Mbu, before yeah, you go, there's been a debate. I know we are talking about nuclear, but just over the past few days, a debate that we cannot be net exporters. Looking at the possibility of having nuclear energy being generated, can we really be exporting some? Because you say you don't generate and keep.
No, you don't generate and keep. So if you generate and it will be more than your need, you can come to agreement with Togo.
Mm-hmm.
Togo, they don't have a generating capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, our friends from Nigeria also don't have that generating capacity. But if we have the West African power pool,
mm-hmm.
you can sell to them. I know, because we all work in the international community on nuclear power. I know Nigeria is seriously considering, and they have more resources than us in terms of money. So they might get it before maybe we get. But whatever they get, it won't be enough even for them to give to us. So the other people, there's Togo, there's Benin, there's what? Cote d'Ivoire. You get it?
Yes.
So we can produce power and export
uh-huh.
if we have enough. Because if we don't have excess capacity,
mm-hmm.
then anytime we have any shock in the system, any challenge, then we have to ration. Because if you don't have the power, you cannot give it out.
So at any point in time, you need to have some excess.
Excess.
So that you can take some off and be able to
have some facility on standby. Standby.
Yeah.
Like if you have a nuclear power, we call it a base load. You use it for your fundamentals. Then you can have like Akosombo. Akosombo, you can decide how much power you want to generate from Akosombo. Because the amount of water that you draw, that will give you the power.
Mm-hmm.
So you can decide. If I have the capacity, and there's I have the capacity to store the water, then I can decide what I want to generate. And if I'm going to have a shortfall, I can generate more. Thermal in the same way.
Uh-huh.
You can decide how much you want to generate. But for the base load, nuclear, if you operate at the maximum base load, that will give you higher efficiency. So you want to use that one as a base load. And you can use the others to supplement.
Okay.
And whenever you have problem, you can do that. So that's what yes.
Dr. Kwamibu, because of our time, we've not finished the discussions. It gets interesting by the minute, but we have to leave it here.
Yes.
We want to thank you very much for helping us.
Thank you for this opportunity. I'm available anytime. Even we can come to the studio and we'll discuss this.
Thank you very much.
Before I leave you,
yes.
let me say this.
Uh-huh.
You see, this journey was
mm-hmm.
started by the first president of Ghana 50
yes.
years ago.
Mm-hmm.
If we have stuck to that journey, I don't think we will get here.
So it means we have to keep going for now.
We shouldn't lose focus.
Mm-hmm.
When people in Germany come and say this, if you ask them where do they get most of their power from, they get it from France.
Wow.
Produce nuclear power.
We'll leave it here for now.
So Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Let's focus on the development of Ghana.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. Dr. Kwame Egbuh is the Deputy Director General of the Ghana Atomic Energy Commission. And some tests here, just from Kwame, thinks it's about time that Ghana goes into nuclear energy through the Ghana Atomic Energy Commission. And this one is saying our forests must be conserved and protected for future generations. Jensun Rashid from Waseso and Kweku Free. Let's be serious on bushfire prevention around the country. Through this, we can develop our forests and its resources. And Ghana's developmental policies are all on pieces of paper. I don't think it's just on pieces of paper, but that is what you think. The Forestry Commission and its guys must be up to the task of protecting